The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I think I still see in the underlying core drivers of economic activity considerable strength. So I think that the U.S. economy continues to perform very, very well. The fundamentals here are in line with inflation continuing down back toward normal levels.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Good afternoon. John Harper filling in for Drew, who is back Monday afternoon on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. But the economy may be doing well, and you look at all of the numbers, all the metrics, and yeah, it is doing well, except when you go to the gas pump or when you get to the checkout line in the grocery store, and then the economy becomes very personal for you and me, right? It was a good day on Wall Street after a very rocky day yesterday. The gross domestic product up 1.6% in the first quarter of 2024. Not as high as many thought, inflation ticking up again. And now we've got a Wall Street veteran who warns you and me to start building our ARC right now. Let's find out what that means from a familiar voice and a trusted voice on the Drew Mariani Show. Peter Grandich, known as the former Wall Street whiz kid. And even without a high school diploma, he became pretty famous on Wall Street, made and lost millions more than once. And in his book, Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid, Peter shares his incredible journey and how his Catholic faith led him to true Catholic conversion, and he provides us guidance on matters of finance, your money, through Peter Grandich and Company, online at petergrandich.com. Peter, good to talk to you again.
Thank you for having me back.
When you say we should start building our financial arc, does that mean I have to take two of every denomination with me? How does that work?
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you this. I'm sure when Noah first started building, it was sunny and 80 degrees, and people were asking, what are you building that big thing for?
But, there you go.
I'm pretty well getting that same attitude from people as well on average. But I believe that because of five particular factors, which we named in a report, things are going to become much more difficult than they already are. And I think when it's all said and done, it will rival what the impact of the Great Depression was to us.
Wow.
And this is something that it's not tomorrow, but it's not many years off. I've used 3 to 5 years, and it's probably sooner. And people go, 3 to 5 years. It's within most people's lifetime they're going to experience this, unfortunately.
So how should you start saving right now for what is, and we've seen this before, the inevitable crash?
Well, the first order of business, which since I've been blessed to talk on Relevant Radio, I've always told people, since in Scripture, there's not one positive verse about debt and many, many warnings about it. And it's very shocking to even Catholics and Christians in general when you tell them that there's more topics about matters of finance versus in the Bible than there is about heaven or hell. You think that would be the bigger focus. So if debt wasn't something that the Word of God felt was important, one of the first things I've encouraged for years is people getting out of it, or at least lowering it. And it's one of the key factors of why to build the ARC, because our federal government has gone in the opposite direction. In fact, we've incurred more debt in the last 4 years than it took 37 years previously to get to. And so we're seeing an acceleration on deficits now running in multi-trillion dollars. I have to tell you, I've been at this 40 years. I never thought I'd be speaking about anything in trillions.
Now
we have it in multi-trillions, and we're getting to the point where even Wall Street titans and industrial titans are talking about the ability to possibly pay the interest is going to be called into question. And that's just one of 5 points. So
Right. Getting
out of debt, living within your means, and really incorporating something that I didn't do in the first 10 or 20 years of my 40-year career, and that is less is more. The reason most people are in that issue is because we're spending more than what we're really taking in.
Yeah.
And the government, while the federal government has a printing best, if you have one, they're going to catch you, and you're going to get in trouble. Our government should have gotten in trouble 20 years ago, but nevertheless, I think debt is a first place to start, to learn to live with less is more. And if I may just say, our parents, my father used to, even in his latter years, would tell me how proud he was never to have a credit card, as if I can't afford it, I'm not going to buy it. And yep. Some people laughed at that, but you know what? That was a better attitude.
Exactly. My mom was a great manager of money, and that's where I learned how to manage money from her. And I'll never forget when they got their first house. She would work this little side job in the house, and my dad would go out to work every single day. And we were never, I was an only child, but never without. And I remember as an adult saying, how did you do it? She said, well, I'd go buy a chicken. And she had, remember, we would roast the chicken and then have it on white bread with gravy. And then the next night, and then I would take whatever was left on the carcass and I would make the dough and do chicken pot pies. And she said, one chicken, three meals. And she said, some weeks we ended up with an extra 25 cents. But she said, we were 25 cents in the black, never in the red.
Well, you know, or chicken in every pot, so to speak.
Yeah. Why can't that be done today? Is it because it's so easy to spend money on plastic?
Yeah, and also, we live in a society where everywhere you look, our children from an early age on the internet now and everything, and they're watching programs where supposedly these Hollywood stars and all have,
right.
You know, the one of the big lies, and we know who the big liar is, but one of the big lies that are told in society is that more money equals more happiness. They want you to believe that there's no way the guy driving the bus can be as happy as the guy that owns the bus company.
Right.
Let me just tell you, with somebody that's managed money at a time for some of the wealthiest athletes, some of the most disheartened and dishappy people I met were people with large sums of money, and some of the most happiest people I ever met with little or no means from a financial standpoint.
And I think the providential timing of this conversation, Peter Brandich, is because as we read in the Acts of the Apostles, and we've been doing Acts for, you know, a couple of weeks now, as the reading at Mass, and also the message of the gospel is that true happiness is that true relationship with God.
Yeah, and you know, and again, it was almost a taboo on Wall Street to tie your faith openly and talk about scripture and all those type of things.
How come? Why is it a taboo?
Well, it's because it goes against what they've hoped to succeed at, and that's selling a lot of financial products. It doesn't make them all bad people, but that's the main goal of it and all. But the interesting issue is when you explain to people that even if you want to look at it as an historical book, that you don't want to believe it's a word of God, somehow whoever put that book together had some pretty deep and proven right thoughts, especially when it comes to matters of finance. You know, half the parables are about that. Hundreds and hundreds of verses about that. And so that book stayed around. Granger's book will be long gone. Whoever else wrote financial books will be long gone. But that book will stay around, and it has so much to do, and so few people look at it. And, of course, putting God, as I was told when I first formed my company 20-something years ago, you could put a rock on the door, you can put a bull or a bear, but you're not putting God's picture on the door. It's just something that they've tried to keep separate and all.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we know as Catholics and Christians that how important faith ties into matters of finance.
Right. Amen. Peter Grandich joining us online, petergrandich.com. And he is a Wall Street veteran who is warning us to start building our financial arc right now. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Maybe you're having trouble saving. Maybe you're a great saver. Share your story. Or you're wondering, okay, I'm going to retire in 10 years. What do I do now? 888-914-9149 here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I just saw a story. It couldn't have been more than a week ago, Peter, about how many Americans have just literally not saved anything for their retirement. And now they're 58, 59, 60. And that's something that is, you know, coming up around the corner.
65% of Americans are working paycheck to paycheck. Almost 50% don't have $1,000 saved for emergencies. And the biggest single thing now, polls, not this isn't Peter's word, but polls among seniors 65 and over, fear of dying has been overtaken by fear of running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very sad, sad situation to see that. And, you know, I also tell people this, and they get forgotten on in all of this. On the lower 50% of income in the United States right now, 40% of them, so that makes 20% of the entire working population, are using credit cards just to pay for food and gas and dwelling. And the perception that you would think if you watch financial networks of what's happening in the United States versus the reality has a big, big discrepancy in my book.
Yeah, I saw something. This must have been on Facebook today. And, you know, there's the inevitable back and forth about politics. And someone was saying, well, yeah, the stock market was 19,000 4 years ago. And look at it today. It's approaching 40,000. That's a false positive.
Well, it's false in this. I mean, don't get me wrong. Since COVID, certain percentage of people, probably the top 5% earners, have done extremely well.
Well, that's That's not me.
No, it's not me either, so I'm not in that camp, please. But I'm talking about the very wealthy, the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars and all. But unfortunately, the vast majority of people have not, in fact, have fallen. And the simplest way and saddest way to see that is just talk to anybody that runs a food bank, and this is what they'll tell you. Not only is attendance up 300-500%, but the number of working-class people, including people of moderate to income, not just low income, are showing up here in order to get by. That's why studies have shown almost 35% of people earning $150,000 say they can't save anything. Mm-hmm. So there is a great separation, and eventually that top of the pyramid is going to get pulled down by the weight of the people below, no matter how well they're doing.
888-914-9149. We're talking about being prudent. We're talking about saving. We're talking about getting your financial house in order with Peter Grandich today, who's warning us to start building our financial arc right now at 888-914-9149. Aaron is joining us in Wisconsin. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show.
I just had a quick question. So I'm a young father and husband. And luckily, we don't have any student debt or anything like that. But the only debt that we have is a mortgage. And I'm wondering if you had any advice for somebody who how to build up our financial situation and maybe pay down our mortgage or anything like that.
Yeah, so having a mortgage isn't one of the crimes, I think, that we would find in Scripture. It would be if you were living in a house, you know, far more than needed, so to speak, and carrying a much higher mortgage just so you could, you know, in a sense, I don't know, brag about it or whatever the case may be. Is one of the things I always like to tell people is if you can start paying principal down, even if it's a few dollars a month, you'd be surprised how faster you pay off your mortgage. And I don't think people realize when they have a 30-year mortgage, and let's just say they borrowed $100,000, how much they actually repay back. In actual cost. And there's also something that comes with debt, and you hear it as you get older particularly. There's a peace that's granted when you're not burdened by debt that's, you know, causing you, you know, aggravation, stress, and all of that. So the combination of having more peace and having less financial stress on you, if you could start maybe paying an extra principal payment or just some more dollars towards the principal, especially if for some reason, you know, your mortgage rate is, you know, you weren't one of those blessed people that got it when it went really, really low. And I would also caution those that have had adjustable mortgages, recognizing that they're going to get reverted and go higher here, because I know you played that tape here at the beginning of it, Yellen. Let's just remember, she used to have a very popular word about inflation, transitory. And that's a word you can't say ever again around the Fed. So I think interest rates are going to stay much more higher than people were used to, and therefore it won't be viable to be borrowing money because it's going to get, you know, more expensive.
Yeah, yeah. They just ticked up again. What is it, 7.18%? What's your interest rate on your mortgage, Aaron?
We got a 3.1. We just got it right at the end of the really good one.
Oh, you did good there. So yeah. You'll pat yourself on that back. But again, even with that, you know, I'll just flip it and say, if you're carrying any debit on credit cards, people say to me, well, I look, Peter, I want to get invest. I want to get in on the market. And I say, you have any credit card debt? Yeah, I have some. Well, how much are you paying? Well, I'm paying 14-18%. Well, here, I can show you how to make 14-18% pay off your debt. So if you have that type of debt, that's always good to pay off.
Aaron, blessings to you and your family. Thanks for listening to Relevant Radio in Wisconsin. Our conversation with Peter Grandich at Peter Grandich Company online, petergrandich.com, the former Wall Street whiz kid who is being pragmatic today, as he always is, with his financial advice on the Drew Mariani Show and getting us ready for that next rainy day that's coming down the pike. 888-914-9149. Andrea's in Orange County, California, listening to Relevant Radio 93KHJ. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. You're on with Peter.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to see if it's okay to use the 401k funds to pay off my mortgage if I plan to retire within the next 5 years.
There's a lot of questions that have to be answered on that. I'm not a cookie-cut approach person. I'd have to know a lot more about you. I'll just say this. Remember on your 401k, people always tell me, oh, I have X of dollars. And I always say, take about 35, 40% less. Say, what are you talking about? Remember, you're going to have to pay taxes on that 401k when you take distribution. And why I want to bring that up to you now and all your listeners, governments are going to only be able to function now to keep raising taxes. All these new proposals you're hearing on capital gains and all this papal tax on unrealized capital gains is because the governments, both, and especially, unfortunately, in your state, which has a huge budget deficit, are going to have to raise taxes and lower services. So we're probably going to have to pay more on when we collect our money 5 years from now than maybe now. So those are some of the things considered. But that question, there's no universal, simple, cookie-cutter answer to that, I'm sorry, at least in my book.
Andrea, thanks for the call, 888-914-9149. It's so easy to blame whoever is in office for the deficits that we have now. You go back generations. Whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in office, they have added to the debt. Can a politician make a difference and turn us around?
Well, that is number five on my reasons for building the ARC. I believe we have political paralysis now. I don't believe the two bodies, and it's demonstrated by the lack of what's been transpiring, can get in a room and really tackle very, very serious problems and deal with it without just simply printing more money and running budget deficits. But what's even worse now is in each party, there's a splintering. So there's a group in the Democrats that want to move more, even more left, and there's groups of Republicans that want to move more right. And so if and when another issue comes, like in 2008, where they went into a room, they didn't do a great job, but they got us enough to get out of it, even though what we were promised was going to be done ended up not being so much done. I don't even think that could take place now. So I don't think there's a political answer to this, and I don't think the answer is going to be something that's only going to take a month, a year, or even a decade. I think it's going to take a generation or more. You made a very good point. It took us 200 and something years to get as much debt as we've increased in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So who's ever in charge now, whatever group is, if they keep sustaining at this pace or if they just keep doing it, they're getting to the point where we may not even pay interest. And that is one of the reasons why you're hearing about our number four reason, and that's BRIC nations, where countries are forming now to not only trade away from the United States, but to not to use its currency. Why it was just reported that China has sold off over half of its U.S. treasuries, because they're recognizing this government has run us into a problem where even paying interest on our debt could be an issue.
I'm driving home from work right now. I'm listening to you, Peter Grandich, on Relevant Radio.
Hold on to the wheel.
Yeah, I'm 45 years old. Is Social Security going to be around when I retire?
I don't believe it. Certainly not in the way that we know it. I just turned 68, and as soon as I was able to collect at 66, I collected. Not because I just wanted to get something back, because I know whatever I gave them 20 or 30 years only buys me 10% of what it was when they took the money from me.
Right.
But
I
really would not counsel anyone at that age to think that there's going to be some sort of government program. And that runs into this number two problem that I pointed out. Not only do we have a retirement crisis, we have an aging crisis. Think about that 45-year-old 10 years from now, if all things keep going in the scales that we have. And now Peter Grange is not 68, he's 78, and I want $500,000, I don't know, lung transplant, Medicare. And some poor 45-year-old guy who can barely put food on the table sees his taxes going up and his Social Security or whatever they're calling it then tax more and feels he's never going to see it. He's going to say, I'm sorry, but that Peter Grandich has lived a nice life. Let him go. And people say, well, that's terrible. I say, well, just look north of the border. In Canada, yeah, they've implemented laws and are carrying them out where seniors who are not well off health-wise and or financially are being encouraged to take their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Canada is a very close country to the United States in more ways than one. If it's happening there in the way this country's going, I think that's a very, very sad option that someone's going to have to look at. But I'm going to tell you this. We keep living the lifestyle that we're living and living way beyond our means. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And can I just add this? If you think this brings people knocking on my door saying, Pete Granich, I want to deal with you, trust me, there are people that tell me, I love you, Pete, but I'm tired of hearing this, even though I believe it's true. They're hoping, you know, I always say this to Drew, hope is a wonderful spiritual strategy, but it's the worst investment strategy. And a lot of people are just down to hope now, hoping things can turn financially.
Kathy in California, as we talk about your money with Peter Grandage, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. Go ahead, Kathy.
Thank you. Hi, Peter. Every time you bring up a point, it makes me think of six other questions. So I'm going to have to make a donation to Relevant Radio so I can get an hour of your time. But in the meantime, you brought up that you took Social Security early. I'm over 65. I keep thinking I'm going to try to retire. I keep thinking I can't because things in our economy are so scary and don't know where they're going, except that we know they're going downhill. And do I take Social Security early to get something, as you said, or do I hold out another, you know, 3 or 4 years to get the maximum amount? I'm not sure it's worth it.
Yeah, there is a certain point you'd have to sit with you individually, someone that understands it completely, and show you that what breaking point you would have to live to on the assumptions that all the payments are going to be made, that then if you then live a much longer life, the higher payments pay off. I just don't have that confidence for myself and my wife that there's, if we do live 10, 15, 20 more years, Social Security, certainly at the level that it's going to be at, is still going to be around. So I felt that just getting something of it is better than possibly nothing 10 years from now.
Kathy, thanks for the call here at 888-914-9149. Kathleen's in Illinois. Kathleen, good afternoon. Welcome to Relevant Radio. You're on with Peter.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so glad to speak with Peter. Peter, I'm 82 years old and retired. All of my money, my savings, are in the stock market. I have a few CDs, but the majority of my money is in the stock market. If I take some of it out of the market, where do you put it?
Well, let me tell you this. This is, I think this is the best way for me to answer. God bless you, first of all, for being 82. And say, let me just say this to you. People say, you know, all these financial people, you always tell us when to buy. You don't tell us when to sell. Here's what you need to ask yourself and to be honest with yourself. If you didn't first have it in now, would you first put it in? And if you have any hesitation or the answer is no, that's your first indication that maybe you don't need to be in or be in as much as you are. I get very troubled when somebody tells me that's had a great life, that's been 82 and all, and they're in something that I'm quite concerned about in terms of its valuation may not perform in the way that it used to be. The other question that's usually never answered on Wall Street, very hard. Yeah, there are some good people I answer. I shouldn't say that. Some financial people know how to deal with financial risk. What a lot of don't know is mental anguish. What you need to ask yourself is if that changes or if it drops by a certain percentage, how will your life be impacted both financially and mentally? And there, too, if that troubles you, that's another indication of maybe considering taking an alternative cash. And let me just tell you this. Getting 5% in T-bills right now, for someone at your age and knowing the risks that are out there, if you were my mom, I'd be probably telling you, if you were all in the stock market, mom, take something out and try to buy a few CDs.
Good advice, Kathleen. Thanks for the call. James in Texas with Peter Grandage talking about your money. Hi, James.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. How can we help you?
Hi, Peter. Yeah, like I was telling the person that took my call, my info, the key phrase that you said is start building your financial arc now. I'm 48 years old. I'm an educator here, and I'm looking at retiring, God willing, in about 4 years at 52 because I meet the rule of 80. have not started investing anything, but my specific question is about the S&P 500 because of my insurance carrier. They send me offers, so on and so forth, through Victory Financial, and they mentioned the S&P 500. So is that something that you would suggest, and what would be a startup? I mean, I have a few thousand dollars that I could put in there. Would that be something you would suggest, or where would you have me start right now based on what you see?
Well, I would certainly have you start with, there's no such thing as a cookie cutter approach. So I would just tell you is you need to budget. One of the first things I tell people when they walk in our office, even the big athletes that made $100 million, have you folks budgeted yourself? Have you seen where you're spending money over 30, 60, 90 days? Do that first. Second, look at if you have where you're paying somebody else for a service. So if you have credit card debt, if you can pay down a mortgage, as we told the earlier person, if you get past all those things and you've put away, you have enough health coverage, I don't know if you mentioned children or whatever, only excess capital really now would I, at this point on what you told me about your life, would I speculate in a market that's done really good? No one's questioned how great it's done, but I think it's going to be far more challenging to offer similar returns, and maybe it's not the best time for somebody to go full blast into something they really don't have any experience in.
You know, Peter, how they say, listen to your elders. And James, thanks for the question. It's a great question and on the minds of so many of our Relevant Radio listeners. They say, listen to your elders. In this particular case, listen to young people. I worked with a young man just out of college, out of Marist College for a couple of years, and he came to work in the accounting department, the radio station where I was working at. And we just had a conversation one day, and it got to money. And he said, you know what I learned is, and I did this, and he said, I've been able to save money ever since I got out of college. So what is it? He said, I wrote down for a week every penny I spent, even if it was a cup of coffee. And then I reviewed it at the end of the week. And he said, I saw where I was wasting money. That is so pragmatic, so easy to do, is simply do a diary of how you spend your money. That's going to be the big aha, and that's going to be the start to savings, isn't it?
Praise be to God. That's the first thing I tell, especially I sit with families real quick, and I tell them each, and don't tell each other, and come back in a month or two, and then they compare, and they realize that you're spending on that, and before they know it, it's hundreds of dollars that are going out that they don't have to do it in all a year. That's a very, very good first step.
Yeah, definitely. Peter Grandich online at petergrandich.com, getting you ready for what is inevitably going to be another market dip or crash. We don't know. It's not going to be tomorrow, but you know how cyclical the market is, and we just want to protect the hard-earned money that you make to just make sure that you and your family are comfortable for the future. You can reach out to Peter at petergrandich.com. That's petergrandich.com. Always blessed to have your wisdom with us on Relevant Radio. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. God bless.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Getting you connected right now.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Rosario, who's listening in New Mexico, for donating her 2014 Fiat 500. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Real faith, real talk. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon, and it's one of the hallmarks of Relevant Radio is to always shine the light of Christ, not get in the way of the light. And how many times, you know, it's funny, we just had the total eclipse of the sun a few weeks ago, and how many times do we become the moon and block out the light of Christ that should be shining through us? That's just, you know, just kind of a quick reflection in that light of Christ to enlighten and to turn around a world that's upside down here. And if you need yet another example of a world turned upside down and how the need for prayer for conversion in this United States is so needed, here is a story that Tommy Valentine is going to tell us about. And Tommy is a frequent visitor to us here on the Drew Mariani Show, as the director of the Catholic Accountability Project at CatholicVote.com. You certainly know about how many Catholics have been terrorized by, and I can't think of a better word than that, Tommy, terrorized by the Department of Justice and the current administration. And at the same time, we see the vandals in pro-life centers, in churches, just seemingly to go scot-free. And now in this latest chapter of a world gone upside down is the DOJ's aggressive targeting of pro-life advocates, in this particular case, an 88-year-old Holocaust survivor. Tommy, welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. Don't you want to be in that meeting when somebody said, yeah, let's go after her? It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, well, I think it really illustrates the contempt. I don't know what other word there is to describe.
That's a good word.
What they seem to have for us, yeah. And thanks for having me, John, and thanks for shining a light on this story. So yeah, the story is this. Eva Edel is an 88-year-old survivor of a communist death camp in Yugoslavia, where she endured horrors that I won't even repeat on your radio because we're on the air right now.
Yeah.
And so she was rescued. She moved to Austria and then later moved to the United States, where she has dedicated much of her life to pro-life activism. A couple of years ago, she was outside a Tennessee abortion clinic, engaged in peaceful, prayerful protest outside that abortion clinic, calling attention to what was going on inside. She was arrested and charged with a federal crime under something called the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. That's the FACE Act, which some of your listeners may have heard of. And so that law makes it illegal for pro-lifers to block abortion clinic entrances. Now, they have really used that, kind of widened the definition of what constitutes blocking an entrance, because there was nothing violent going on in this Tennessee case. But it's a federal crime. The law was enacted in the 90s. It was signed by Bill Clinton. But one of the concessions that was made by some pro-life members of Congress was that also as part of that law, you cannot block or interfere with people's right to access their churches or other places of worship. So it criminalizes both. You can't block abortion clinics, but you also can't block churches. Now, as many of your listeners are familiar with, and I'm sure some of them have even had this happen at their churches, our churches across the country have been under sustained attack for 4 years now. As I've talked about on your air before, there have been over 400 acts of violence and vandalism against Catholic churches in the United States in less than 4 years. It began in the summer of 2020 when we had civil unrest in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd. But while the unrest died down that summer, the attacks on Catholic churches continued and even escalated, especially after the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe versus Wade was leaked 2 years ago. And so that number of 400 in the last 4 years includes 250 attacks since the Supreme Court leak, many of which have been organized by what are really domestic terror groups in support of abortion, where they have burned down churches, they've desecrated holy objects, they've tried to storm churches, disrupted masses, stolen the tabernacle, desecrated the Eucharist, unspeakable crimes. The difference is that the Biden administration loudly and almost brags about how they charged these Tennessee people, including the communist death camp survivor, but they haven't prosecuted a single church attack under the FACE Act.
Right.
And just one more point I'll make that really helps drive home the dichotomy here is that the same week that the Biden administration proudly announced that they had convicted this death camp survivor of the FACE Act violation, there was a man in New Jersey, his name's Elliot Bennett, who attacked a Catholic church in his town for the third time since 2018.
Big story here in New York. Big story here in New York. Yep.
Exactly. And so clearly, whatever penalties this guy faced in the past for attacking this church were not enough to dissuade him from going and trying to burn down the church to finish the job once and for all. And federal law is meant to be a deterrent against criminal acts, but they're not using it as a deterrent. Clearly, the penalties that this man faced in New Jersey were not strong enough. The Biden administration needs to be fighting this wave of violence, and they're not doing it.
So as we have this conversation, Tommy, you can sit here and get angry at the Biden administration, and you should. You should get angry at the Department of Justice, and you should. But at the same time, you just say, well, what can I do? And listen, I've fallen into that mindset. And then, you know, it hit me more than once. Well, what you can do is start getting involved in your own community, is standing up and being more demonstrative for your faith. It's easier said than done as a shy person, but I'm also passionate about my faith, and I will have this conversation with others. And you know the looks that you get when you start talking about issues of life and the FACE Act and the attacks on Catholic churches. Oh, no, it's not happening here. But that really is the takeaway from this conversation, is that we have to start getting involved, not only or take our own parish communities out in the community at large, not only stand up for who we are as Roman Catholic men and women, but start to affect change with local law organizations in our own communities and mindsets in our own communities, because that's the only way we're going to fix this. It's not going to be from top down. It's going to be grassroots from bottom up.
That's right, John. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I have a couple ideas along those lines of what people can do. The first is just to be vigilant. You know, I have a friend who's in a religious community, and they had to sweep their property after the Supreme Court leak every night for a few weeks after it happened, just to make sure nothing went on. And thank God nothing did there. But just be vigilant. You know, you could even volunteer with your pastor, say, I want to help you keep an eye on the property. You might even have security equipment that you can donate to the parish. You know, people have to take their parish's safety into their own hands. But even beyond that, there are things that they can do in the public policy sphere. You know, Congress has oversight over the Department of Justice. If you see that your congressman is coming to your district and holding an event, go to the event, and they shake hands after these events. They talk to their constituents and tell them, you know, this church in our district was attacked, and the Biden administration isn't doing anything about it. What will you do about it in Congress? Ask them questions like that. There are also things that you can do on the state and even local level. In fact, just last month, there was a bill that was passed in the House of Representatives up in Alaska that was actually introduced by a Democrat, which strengthens penalties against church vandalism, because they've had a number of attacks up there. And that bill took it from what was a misdemeanor, I don't think it was even a jailable offense, yeah, and turned it into a heavier crime up there. So research the law in your state and see if there are things that you can do with your state legislator or even at the county level. Another thing is get involved with your local law enforcement. You know, I've talked to a number of pastors whose churches have been attacked, and they say that local law enforcement has been diligent, and they're trying their best to find out what's happening. The problem is that they're just stretched thin. And you know what they say, see something, say something, form a relationship with your local sheriff's department or your local police department and say, you know, hey, we're worried about this. Will you guys just come check out the property every once in a while when you're on your patrols at night? Because a lot of these attacks happen at night, unsurprisingly.
And I would bet,
Tommy, things that people can do.
Yeah, and I would bet, Tommy, that we all know people of other faiths who are either within our circle of friends or in our neighborhood, because this is an opportunity to be ecumenical and get members of other denominations in our own community and set up that meeting with the police chief, set up that meeting with the sheriff to let them know where you stand, not only as citizens of the community, but citizens of your faith community as well. Because as they say, there's safety in numbers here. And that's what we're talking about here, is to, you know, go and educate these folks and not take your foot off the gas, because one and done isn't going to change minds or hearts.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that brings up an example of one pastor I talked with whose church sustained serious damage in an arson attack that was deeply creepy. The attacker went and actually tried to set fire to the confessional door. And wow. I told the pastor, this guy must have known what he was doing, because that's not something, you know, a random person on drugs comes in and does.
Exactly.
And he said what surprised him most was the support that he got from the local synagogue and the local mosque and the Protestant churches. They reached out and said, hey, what can we do? How can we help? Now, thankfully, that church's insurance covered just about everything, so they were in pretty good shape there. But he said he was deeply touched by the concern they showed for him. And so, this problem is distinct in terms of the scale to Catholic churches. But I'm also seeing, when I scan the news, you know, these things happen to other churches as well.
Right.
And they happen to mosques and synagogues as well. Now, the difference is that mosques and synagogues create national news when it happens, and rightfully so. We're not arguing against that. But whatever the case may be, we need to be unifying, as you said, with other faith communities and tell them, hey, we're in this together. There's forces of darkness out there that are now trying to attack our churches. In fact, just this week on, I believe it was Monday night, at the cathedral in San Francisco, when Archbishop Corleone was inside hearing confessions, a parishioner leaving the church was stabbed.
yep.
by a man saying Jesus is not real.
Right. I just saw that on the Archdiocesan website today. You're right. That happened in San Francisco. Yep.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So listen, I mean, this is not to freak people out. This is not to say, don't go to mass, but it is to say, be vigilant. I mean, the world is getting darker.
Right.
The world is scary. There's forces of evil that are out there. I tell you, people go on our website and look at this map and look at the details of some of these attacks. Like, these people know what they're doing. There are some cases of drugs and mental illness, but even then, I know of one case in, I believe it was Missouri, where a guy who was on drugs went in and took a sledgehammer to the altar and took the relics out. And I told my wife, like, I've been a Catholic my whole life. I'm a cradle Catholic. I didn't know there were relics inside each altar. How did a guy hopped up on drugs know that?
Right.
And take a sledgehammer to it and take the relics out. So it's like, even when you think you can explain away some of these cases, it's drugs or mental illness, there's still some things that are really weird going on there. So people need to be vigilant. They need to be praying.
We're talking about being vigilant as we look at the double standard from the Department of Justice, and also being vigilant in our own communities now, as the Department of Justice, as we've talked about so many times here on the Drew Mariani Show, is targeting those, and they're charging with the FACE Act, those who are protesting in front of standing up for life in front of abortion clinics, and they get hauled in, where in the meantime, churches get vandalized, things happen, nothing. Just crickets. How you can get involved. 888-914-9149 to join our conversation. Perhaps this has happened in your community, and maybe you have some solutions as well. We'd love to share that news with others around the country and around the world on the Relevant Radio app. 888-914-9149 as we continue with Tommy Valentine, the director of the Catholic Accountability Project at CatholicVote.com, on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
With flexible premium life insurance by sponsor Catholic Order of Foresters, a 40-year-old can get $1 million coverage for under $19 monthly. Go to relevantradio.com/Forester. That's relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon. He's back on Monday here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Imagine being face-to-face with a real hero, and you would categorize Eva Edel as a hero. 88 years old, Holocaust survivor who went through the worst of the worst experiences in a concentration camp, but survived. Now she's convicted of violating the FACE Act. Why? Because she participated in a prayer protest inside a Tennessee abortion clinic. That's the Department of Justice, and that's not a one and done there. The Department of Justice, as you know, has aggressively targeted pro-life advocates like Eva, and at the same time, refused to prosecute those who are attacking churches, Catholic and in other denominations. Tommy Valentine has written about this. He is the director of the Catholic Accountability Project at CatholicVote.com. And we're having our conversation with Tommy and with you at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. When you talk about this, and I inevitably talk about this with friends, and they say, well, why are you getting so upset about it? And I say, because you have to. Because, this is happening because the world is upside down. Here's Eva, who's 88. They're prosecuting her. And my friend was the pastor of Most Blessed Sacrament Church in Bergen County, New Jersey. An arsonist went in there and burned down this magnificent edifice. It went down to ashes. They're just in the process of rebuilding right now. And yeah, that got some coverage for a day and a half, and then off it went. But that gives you an indication, yet again, if you need another example, Tommy, of how upside down we are.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, I think what really bothers people is just the selective and unequal enforcement of the law, because we all have it in our head that the law should be applied evenly. And, you know, there's some discretion, you know, police officer pulls you over, he doesn't right. have to write you a speeding ticket. But this is something different. When we're talking about violent crime, people just can't stand the thought that some people who take a position that's politically unpopular with the Biden administration and their supporters can be thrown in jail, in Eva's case, for possibly the rest of her days on earth. and that people who commit serious violent crimes against Catholic churches are not being prosecuted. Or if they are prosecuted, it's under, you know, it's under local law, which is not as strong as maybe federal law would be.
Right.
So
right.
That's what people can't stand.
Oh, did we lose you, Tommy?
Can you hear me, John?
Ah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, and that again goes to the point, if you're just joining our conversation as we talk about this, why we need to get involved and educate everyone from local law enforcement all the way up when you have those meet and greets with Congress people when they come back to your district, and follow up, because when you call their offices in Washington, D.C., yes, it does get written down. Yes, it does get read. And, you know, we're asking you to be persistent. Just be persistent. And so we can start changing this mindset here in the country. Deacon Todd is joining our conversation with Tommy Valentine from CatholicVote.com at 888-914-9149. He joins us from Cecil, Wisconsin. Deacon Todd, welcome to Relevant Radio. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks, guys. I just wanted to report. So we recently were actually added to one of the stops on the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage, and we're starting to get the word out about that. And then I don't know if it was shortly before or shortly after that, we had someone who very deliberately, you could see on our security cameras, very deliberately walked up the street, walked around our parking lot, walked to the back of the building, spray painted a 666 on our building, and then walked away. And didn't tag any other buildings in town, didn't even tag any other churches in town. So you could tell it was a very targeted attack.
When you took that video to the authorities, what did they say? How did they treat that, Deacon Todd?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we even found, I found a footprint in the dirt. You could very see a very clear footprint in the dirt around the back of the building. I found this, the spray paint can, but he said, you know, for vandalism, the state crime lab's too overwhelmed and probably not going to do much. So I gave him the stuff. They said they would hang on to it, but then that's about as far as they took it.
And again, Tommy, it speaks to that persistency that, you know, we need to, it's almost like, I'm not saying we take the law in our own hands, but we really need to remind law enforcement with everything else that's going on, that this is a critical part of not only the infrastructure of the city, but who the city is and the infrastructure of people and how it is faith-based.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, you know, we installed a few cameras on the inside of the church, but we really only installed the camera in the sanctuary to look at our tabernacle, you know,
sure.
Protecting our most
yeah.
valuable asset, right? So that's, I mean, we were doing it on the outside of our building more to catch for liability of people slipping and falling in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, you know, and here we catch some guy coming to do damage to our building.
You know, and also, Deacon Todd, the double-edged sword here, because then you cannot have your church open for worship during the day for someone who does want to go in front of the tabernacle for 5 or 10 minutes or a half hour just to have that eye contact with the Lord. That's one of those things.
That's the reason I installed cameras, because I do open the doors. I open the doors from 8 until 8 every day.
Wow.
And, you know, we've got a camera pointing at every person that walks in the door, and, you know, we know it, you know. And so I'm a pastoral leader for the parish. We don't have a resident priest, so I run the day-to-day business operations of the parish. And I live across the street, so I see cars in the parking lot. I see things. And so whenever I see somebody I don't recognize, I'm able to log into the cameras and
right.
check things out.
Right. But again, Tommy, that shows you where we are now in so many parish communities. You know, Cecil, Wisconsin is not a big city. It just shows you where we are, Tommy, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, we've quantified about $25 million in damages to these churches.
Wow.
And that's a huge number. And a lot of times these churches don't have the budget for the type of damages they're looking at. When a priceless stained glass window that was made 150 years ago gets smashed by a brick, that's not something that a little church has the amount of money to deal with right away. But I want to ask you, Deacon Todd, and anybody else who's listening, I'm not familiar with that particular case. if there are cases out there that you don't see on our website, because we document each and every one, please email it to us. You can email it to us at info@catholicvote.org, because we track and we document each individual attack. And we've been in contact with several members of Congress, especially ahead of committee hearings, with the Attorney General, with top law enforcement officials. And in fact, the attacks in our tracker have been entered into the congressional record multiple times. So we're making sure that the word is getting to the policymakers in D.C., but we rely on local news reports and we rely on Catholics to send us the information. So, Deacon, I invite you and any other listeners, go on our website. You'll find it right on our homepage. And if the attack is not listed there, please send us an email and we'll get it added.
Deacon Todd, thank you so much for your witness. And again, that that email is info@catholicvote.org, info@catholicvote.org. I am hopeful the next time we have this conversation, Tommy, it is one that shows that we're on the road to solutions, and that we, as I know you do, pray to the Holy Spirit that that guidance for our elected officials from our local communities all the way up to the federal government can start changing these mindsets. So we see people prosecuted for FACE Act violations, and we see people like Eva Edel celebrated for standing up for life. Tommy Valentine is the director of the Catholic Accountability Project, CatholicVote.org. Again, that email is info@CatholicVote.org. Tommy, thank you so much. Cale Clark coming up next. Father Rocky with the Rosary Across America coming up at 7 o'clock Central Time. And Drew is back on Monday here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.